Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade, here each weekday morning with the information you need to start your workday. And on Sundays, we put aside this special hour to go in-depth on stories and issues important to Metro Atlanta. And we've all had one thing in common this past week, the heat. WSB meteorologist Christina Edwards.
So this very hot weather that we've experienced for 2 weeks, quite frankly, with temperatures about 10 degrees above average, is finally coming down. The average high is about 89 to 90 degrees here in Metro Atlanta, and our afternoon temperatures will be right about at that point. So yes, finally, the heat is coming down. It is starting to break. However, it is still late June. We have plenty of summer to go, and usually the hottest temperatures of the year are registered in August, September, and lately they've been extending all the way into October. So we have plenty of hot weather to go through. As I have mentioned, I've been expecting hotter, drier conditions this year because of the La Nina summer.
So there are more opportunities for more heat waves to come.
That's right.
One of the things that makes heat like this bearable is dependable air conditioning and a dependable power supply to run it. Speaking with Georgia Power President Chris Womack, how's the grid holding up during the heat wave?
Scott, we're holding up very well right now. You know, we've had a lot of experience with these kind of conditions, and we prepare our system, we maintain our system for these kinds of conditions, and so far we're performing very well. And so we look forward to continuing to provide our customers with the service and reliability they expect from us. We make the investments long-term, and we plan long-term for these extreme conditions. We make sure we have proper reserve margins on the generation side, and it's an opportunity to also thank our generation employees and our plants for all of the work that they do in running those facilities and making sure that the investments we make on the wires, on the transmission side, on the distribution side, all the work that we do to prepare for these conditions, this is the time when it really pays off.
Is the hot weather season the biggest power draw season for you?
Historically, it has been, Scott. You know, we have gone through periods of the past few years where we've seen our peak demands in the winter months. We had not seen summer peaks here of late, say, over the past decade. But we have built our system historically to prepare for peaks in the summertime. And so these are conditions that we prepare ourselves for.
And you feel pretty good about the headroom?
We feel good about our planning margins. You know, we do put in place reserve margins for extreme conditions for both the summer as well as the winter. And we feel good about resources being available to meet the needs and demands we see in front of us right now.
Thanks for everything you've done. It's nice to know the AC is going to be there when we hit the thermostat.
Well, Scott, it's our pleasure, and we look forward to continuing to work with our customers. If they're customers who need support or assistance, they should give us a call, and we'll try to match them up with available resources. And so we're always trying to help in any way that we can.
Georgia Power President Chris Womack, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, sir. Stay cool.
Thanks, Scott.
Let's dig deeper. On the line with Georgia Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols, following up on our chat with Georgia Power President Chris Womack. And Tim, it made, I think, a lot of people feel a little bit better knowing that there's a lot of headroom in the grid here in Georgia where we don't have to worry about brownouts or blackouts like some other states do. What about this reserve margin that Chris Womack mentioned? Talk about that and what that really means.
Yeah, we set a reserve margin of 26%, but truth be told, we are exceeding that substantially, both in the winter and the summer. And that may cost us a little bit more to have that substantial reserve margin. And maybe you don't need it, Scott, until you do need it. And if you don't have it, you're in trouble. So I think for me as an energy regulator, I just want to use the utmost caution because when you have a grid failure, You've got people's freezers melting. You've got people dying in some instances of overheating. There's so many things that it can trigger that you just don't want to go there.
As a regulator, then, are you looking at this reserve margin and are you comfortable with it?
Well, what we as financial regulators look at is it prudent for us to pay for the reserve margin, because
yes.
It's not free.
Yeah,
I've got a list here of the plants that we start turning on when our grid gets constrained, and there's 22 sources here that we would start turning on. Each one that we turn on is less efficient than the one above it. And so the one at the very bottom is the least efficient, the most expensive. So, you know, I love for us to be able to meet demand in the most efficient way possible. But having a reserve margin, Scott, means that you have some plants maybe that you don't run hardly ever except on that 100-degree day in the afternoon for 4 hours.
That's fascinating. And I would think maybe that, is it the old adage that the last kilowatt you generate is always the most expensive?
It is. That's exactly right. And we've got other ways, Scott, that we can supplement the grid. For example, there are 47 large customers enrolled in a special interruptible rate, meaning that they have agreed that if there is a pseudo grid crisis, that they are willing to be curtailed to stop operations, and they get a cheaper rate because of it. So they're kind of on standby to assist, and those 47 customers represent about 160 megawatts of demand response. And if you think about a megawatt being the power it takes to run basically a super Walmart or a super Target. That's about how much power. So this would be the equivalent of 160, 170 super Walmarts worth of power that can be triggered instantly by just turning off these companies who obviously know this can happen. They've been given a warning even the day before that, hey, tomorrow we are expecting to be tight and you may be curtailed for a period. And that's just what they sign up for, and they are compensated for that.
Last time we spoke, you were beginning the process to go over Georgia Power's integrated resource plan, something they do every so often to prognosticate what it's going to take to answer demands in the future, which obviously they had to do 20 years ago for us to be in good shape today. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, we do this religiously by law every 3 years. So the last one was in 2019. We update this, deciding, okay, which plants need O&M? Which plants do we want to close? Let's look at the fuel scenario, the possible carbon price that might come in the future. How are we going to respond to that? How does our transmission system look? Where are people moving? Where's the demand? How much solar do we have? Are there deals to be had out there? We leased 122 wind turbines in Oklahoma because we got a phenomenal deal on these idle turbines. And we're wheeling that energy right into the southern system. So there's always, Scott, things that we need to look at and revise in order to keep this grid, top notch.
Along with his work as a Georgia Public Service Commissioner, you can catch Tim Eccles' Energy Matters program on our sister station, WGAU in Athens, on Saturday mornings. Hey, Tim, it's always good to talk to you. Stay cool.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scott.
And we have a new development since our interviews with Chris Womack and Tim Eccles. Georgia Power announced Friday that it's asking state regulators to approve an electricity rate hike of nearly 12% over the next 3 years. The AGAC reports the average household could see their bill climb by $14.32 a month. The company says the increases are needed to further modernize the grid, continue transition away from fossil fuels, and improve customer service. Georgia Public Service Commission hearings in the company's rate case will begin in September. One more thing on the energy theme, checking in with WSB consumer expert Clark Howard. Clark's thinking what's going to finally bring down these record-breaking sky-high gas prices. Is the proposal to suspend the 18-cent-a-gallon federal gas tax a gimmick, or is it really going to help?
This is a gimmick, and it will save people a little money. So it's both. And this is an election year, and it's looking really rough for the Democrats. So anything that they can do, that at least at the margins, makes things better for people's wallets will be welcome. But gasoline is not going to get better till the war in Europe is resolved. And if you look at what caused the huge run-up in gasoline prices, it's all based on the fact that we are sending so much of our oil now, our refined gasoline, overseas, and that's why our prices have gone up so much in the United States, is we try to help our allies in Europe. And so what happens? Supply and demand. We've got still strong demand in the United States and around the world. So the big news is when the war in Ukraine is over, we will see a significant, and actually it could be a huge drop in the price of gasoline. If you think about what happens over the years, every time we have a big run-up in the price of gasoline, it feels like it's never going to end. And then all of a sudden, prices come back down. And that's what's going to happen this time as well. Nobody can tell you exactly when that is, but I guarantee you that these high prices are not permanent. They are temporary.
Thanks, Clark. Coming up next, how the long-running true crime podcast Breakdown is breaking down what's going on with the Fulton County Special Grand Jury looking at election meddling. Stay with us. You're listening to our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. The news storyline for the long-running true crime podcast series Breakdown on AJC.com.
No U.S. president has ever been charged with a crime. But in February, Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis sent state officials a letter listing half a dozen laws the president and his allies may have broken.
Those laws include solicitation of election fraud, giving false statements, conspiracy, racketeering, violation of oath of office, and making threats related to the administration of the state's elections.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's True Crime Podcast series Breakdown is looking at the special grand jury investigating allegations of meddling in the 2020 Georgia election. Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr is among those who've already testified. AJC Legal Affairs reporter Bill Rankin is one of the principals behind the Breakdown series. He has from the beginning. It's good to talk to you again.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
So how will you handle this? You know, what will you do to get inside what's going on that special grand jury room?
Well, we're trying to explain the process, and we're trying to find as many people who testify and try to get them to talk to us, because what happens inside the grand jury is secret. The prosecutors can't talk about what's going on. Only the witnesses who talk can talk about what's going on.
As far as the way the special grand jury is set up, well, they have a year to get their work done. Is that the bottom line?
They have a year, but the district attorney, Fani Willis, has said she hopes to finish by this fall. A lot will depend on the challenges she faces when she subpoenas witnesses to testify. You know, they may fight some of the president. People close to the president could try executive privilege objections. Mm-hmm. I think she's going to subpoena some legislators here, and they can raise immunity objections. So it could get drawn out a bit. We are all hoping that it ends this fall, that's for sure. In our podcast, we're talking to all the key players. We're looking at all the possible crimes that could have been violated, and we're going in depth and explaining how that could or could not have happened. And we're doing profiles on the key players, like the district attorney, Fani Willis.
The first episode of what will be several is up right now at AJC.com, and the Breakdown special series looking at the special grand jury. But what I've got you, Bill, a story that you've covered since the beginning, some breaking news, the Georgia Supreme Court deciding that Ross Harris should get a new trial for the hot car death of his 22-month-old son in 2014. How will you bring that story up to date?
It was a 6-3 decision. They ruled that the trial judge put in too much highly prejudicial evidence about Justin Ross Harris's sexual proclivities outside of his marriage, and so much so that he didn't get a fair trial. And we're going to have an episode coming out in the coming days explaining that. We covered that case throughout from beginning to end, and it was quite an experience, because the publicity was so intense. The trial was moved from Marietta down to Glenn County in Brunswick, and it took 2 months to try. the case was so controversial and followed so closely that when the podcast was airing, it was one of the top five podcasts in the world downloaded. So that just shows you the interest people had in this case. Because at first he was a sympathetic character, a father who loved his son and left his son in the car. And then when the evidence came out about his sexting and sleeping with prostitutes and other women, it turned on a dime against him. He became one of the most vilified people in the country, for sure.
Do you have any indication at all on how quickly prosecutors may come back and retry the case? I know they've got a motion pending right now to revisit the ruling from the state Supreme Court, but what's the timeline here?
I wonder if they do want to retry the case. I don't know. They could retry him for murder. They could not retry him, or they could try to reach some plea agreement where he could plead guilty to a lesser charge. Your guess is as good as mine what will happen. But we will be following it very closely for sure.
You can follow the Breakdown podcast on AJC.com. Bill Rankin, it's always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Scott. Always a pleasure.
Coming up next, our Sunday morning roundtable begins with the impact in Georgia of the Friday Supreme Court decision on abortion. Stay with us. Atlanta's Morning News Sunday edition continues, and it's time for a Sunday roundtable. Joining us, WSB political analyst Bill Crane, CSI Crane. You see his weekly blog and video vlog on WSBRadio.com. And Atlanta Journal-Constitution political reporter Greg Bluestein. Follow his Politically Georgia podcast at AJC.com. And his new book is Flipped, How Georgia Turned Purple. Hey, guys, it's good to be with you again.
Always great to be with you.
Greg, the Georgia implications for the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, allowing states to ban abortions.
First, the political aspect. Democrats hope this breathes new life into their political campaigns. They're not celebrating this ruling by any means, of course, but they hope it gives them a unifying message in a campaign that's been dominated by concerns about the economy, about inflation, about higher energy prices. Now Democrats have, this issue to rally their voters around. And again, polls show a wide majority of Georgians supported preserving Roe v. Wade, not just Democrats, but also moderates and even some conservatives. So this is an issue that will continue to really shape the campaign trail. It really could reshape the political elections in Georgia. And the legal implications are still being hashed out. But really what happens next is we'll see if the appeals court let stand Georgia's law. Georgia's anti-abortion law, which forbids abortions as early as 6 weeks.
Bill, your view on what happens next?
Well, Georgia has a pending review and a separate federal appellate action of its abortion heartbeat bill, which basically would outlaw all abortions after about 6 weeks when a fetal heartbeat can be detected. That review of that statute will continue independent of the Supreme Court's decision because Georgia does not have a trigger statute, which would automatically put that into effect. Practically speaking, for all 50 states, the regulation of abortion will return to those states. And so we'll have a patchwork of various stages of trimesters and various consents and notifications across the 50 states. And I would go ahead and make the next jump that red states will tend to be more conservative in their regulation of that procedure and blue states less so. But you will also see some organizations pop up that will actually probably help move people back and forth across state lines, because even though life is precious, 20% of pregnancies during 2020 in the United States were ended in abortion. So it's not going to go away. It's not something that is possible to forecast that will end. This just makes it more difficult for a woman who, for any number of reasons, physical or otherwise, believes she cannot parent or would not be able to carry a child to full term and give that child up for adoption.
To your understanding, does this mean anything immediately happens in Georgia, or do we just pretty much keep the status quo until somebody, the legislature, acts or something along that line?
As my understanding, because I got prepared for this before the fact when we had the earlier opinion leaked, is that the appellate action will continue on the heartbeat bill and no immediate change occurs in Georgia until that law clears appellate review, or as you referenced, the Georgia General Assembly takes a new action and the governor signs another bill. There are some who've said and suggested that on this issue, the governor in an election year might call a special session on this specific issue. That is a possibility.
Meanwhile, the special Fulton County grand jury investigating alleged election meddling here in Georgia will continue their work and going all the way to the top of the state government looking for testimony. Greg Bluestein, how important would Governor Kemp's testimony be here?
It's going to be really fascinating. We might never know what he testifies because, of course, it's behind closed doors. But we really don't know a lot about what Donald Trump tried to pressure him to do. We know a lot about Brad Raffensperger. We've all heard that famous tape. We know that Donald Trump called Brian Kemp repeatedly. I reported that the morning of a rally in Valdosta back in December of 2020, he pushed Brian Kemp to hold an emergency special session to overturn the results of the election. But there's so much we still don't know. We don't know a lot of specifics about what was said. And we haven't really heard much from Governor Kemp himself. So hopefully some of that stuff will leak out, because I'm really curious as a journalist and as a Georgia citizen what Donald Trump did to try to pressure Brian Kemp.
And of course, the grand jury proceedings are underway now, and they're normally secret. But Bill Rankin, AJC's legal affairs reporter, told me earlier this morning, I didn't know this, and while the prosecutors cannot say anything about what happened inside, witnesses can. And so they'll be standing by for anyone to make a public statement. Bill Crane, what are you looking for as that process continues?
Well, I've served as a grand juror, and they also get to ask questions of the witnesses in most settings. So that's another reason the governor's doing his on tape. I think we'll get more detail on the asks that were multiple that came from President Trump to have a special session that were made not only to Governor Kemp, but to Lieutenant Governor Duncan and House Speaker David Ralston, with each of them explaining, one, that any change they made in Georgia law would take effect at the next election, not the election that had just occurred, so that it would not have the force of law. And two, trying to explain, though the White House didn't want to seem to listen, the constitutional roles that we have here, that the Secretary of State, along with local election officials, oversees elections, not the governor, not the House, and that was not appropriate, just like Mike Pence had to explain to the president how the U.S. Constitution works. Mm-hmm. I think we also may learn a little bit more about how frustrated the governor was when supporters of the president started attacking his family. And I'll specifically reference a young man named Harrison Deal, who was seeing one of the governor's daughters at the time and working for Kelly Loeffler's campaign, who was killed in an automobile accident, tragically, on the way to a Loeffler campaign event during the runoff campaign. Trump supporters began texting Governor Kemp's daughter, basically telling her, this is because your father won't do enough on the election, as if they had murdered Harrison Deal. That was the one time in that process that I saw Governor Kemp begin to lose his composure. And I believe Greg covered the press conference at the Capitol that day or the day after, where the governor said, basically, leave my family. And he didn't say the F word, but alone.
Yeah, I've never seen Governor Kemp angrier than I saw him that day. He said, leave my family out of this. He said that these conspiracy theories are going too far. And this was yet another reminder this past week of the real human cost of those conspiracy theories. This isn't just empty political rhetoric that Republican candidates who support Donald Trump can just say, because those actions have consequences. And that was one of them, was death threats against Governor Kemp's family. You know, he's a public official. He said, I can take it, but it's his family. It's his three young daughters. It's their friends. You know, it's their loved ones who really were in the receiving end of a lot of those conspiracy theories at the time.
As well as the wife of Secretary of State Raffensperger and others. And if you remember, Gabe Sterling, the Deputy Secretary of State, at one of the press briefings during the recount said, this has got to stop. This rhetoric, the threats, someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get killed. And of course, on January the 6th, some people got killed.
We were wondering just what would stick from that January 6th hearing, especially here in the state of Georgia. And Eric Erickson had something interesting to say.
The polling that's out, the interviews with people in swing districts around the country, shows the January 6th committee is having no impact. And I doubt what happened yesterday is going to have an impact. Gabe Sterling and Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, and his right-hand guy at the Secretary of State's office, testifying before the January 6th committee. It's the same Brad Raffensperger you heard on the phone to Donald Trump, documenting all of the wild claims, the assertions, the suitcases full of ballots. It was all bunk. It was all made up. It was all investigated. It was all dismissed. But Donald Trump's supporters, just by faith, they believed the election in Georgia was stolen, and yet they looked for votes. They couldn't find them. Donald Trump demanded them. Most interestingly to me was that Donald Trump dismissed everything Brad Raffensperger said, claiming he had better information, and yet wouldn't give it to Brad Raffensperger.
Greg Bluestein, what wound up sticking for you from those committee hearings this past week?
Yeah, Eric's right on that call. Donald Trump, Brad Raffensperger actually said he was referring to a WSB story. He said, I've got the WSB link for you. And Donald Trump says, I've got a better link. I've got my own link. And then just changed the subject. You know, what really stuck out to me and stuck out to so many people who watched that was the testimony of Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, the two Fulton County election workers who were implicated, entangled in a false conspiracy theory promoted by Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, and others involving what they said was a USB drive that was handed from one to another full of votes. There was no evidence ever that that was happening. It was a phony lie. And Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss talked about how that ruined their lives, how they can no longer use their name in public. They feel like they can't go to the grocery store, how they can't live the lives that they wanted to live, that they've quit their jobs. And you know what that USB drive ended up being? A ginger mint that one was passing to another. You know, it's another sad commentary on how far these election lies have gone and how they really have ruined people's lives.
Yeah. How about it, Bill?
I don't know that, as Eric was saying, that a lot of votes are being changed. I do think it's a fresh reminder of connecting the dots, how long the president and his senior advisors and campaign officials were involved in attempting to overturn the results of the election, not just bemoaning them, but actively trying to overturn them, which is not legal, which will affect the grand jury proceedings, which will affect the ultimate recommendations from the January 6th committee to the Justice Department. But I would also caution Democrats, who I think kind of are a little gleeful as we replay these tapes from the January 6th committee, for the same reasons that Donald Trump lost in the primary runoff election, two more congressional races, Vernon Jones losing by more than 50 percentage points, and Rich McCormick not winning by that much of a margin over Jake Evans in the sixth, but a healthy, healthy margin, is that people are tired of looking backwards at the 2020 general election and relitigating that. They have a future. They have an economy. They have $5 gasoline prices. They have concerns about common sense gun control and whether the Supreme Court's going to rule on the Roe versus Wade being overturned. Those are all forward-thinking issues. And candidates who only look backwards, and Donald Trump is not on the ballot this November, at their peril.
Looking ahead to the coming week, Stacey Abrams is setting out some turf, Greg Bluestein, and not only getting teachers a bigger pay increase, but law enforcement as well.
Yeah, she's pushing for some big ticket, big money items. You know, not long ago, a couple of weeks ago, she talked about a teacher pay raise of about $11,000 to start the base pay salary for teachers at $50,000. Now she's talking about raising the base pay for Georgia State Patrol officers and correction officials and public safety supervisors to $50,000 as well. That would be a pay raise of about $10,000 to $13,000 for many of these officers at a cost of about $180 million over 2 years. This is something she's doing because she knows in part that Republicans are going to step up attacks, painting her as a supporter of defund the police, as soft on crime. But there's risks for her embracing this as well from her own party. There's a lot of folks in the Democratic Party who advocate more police reforms and who don't want to spend more money on police officer hirings and resources and this. So there was a lot of pushback to Stacey Abrams from the left on this proposal when it came out a few days ago.
Hey, Bill Crane, as usual, the final words to you.
Supreme Court is going to be wrapping up a session that could have some landmark decisions come down in the final hours and days. And on a personal note, since we got together the last time, our mother went on to the other side, and she's often complained to me about not knowing when to listen where and when to read where. Well, the seat she's got now, she can tune in and see and listen and hear anything and everything she wants and hit that replay button without any cost or time or energy. We will miss you, Lynn Crane. We love you.
Bill, thank you. Well said. And thank you both. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
You too.
We'll be right back. This is our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. Finally this morning, how many times have we seen a police call involving someone going through a mental health crisis end badly? A lot of people would say too many. WSB's Jennifer Griffiths reports that a Metro Atlanta Police Department making sure it never happens to them.
We felt that it was very necessary for our police officers to address mental health in a way that didn't criminalize the people that they were responding to.
Gwinnett County Commission Chairman Nicole Hendrickson says that is why they fully support the expansion of a mental health partnership between Gwinnett County Police and Viewpoint Health.
It allows a clinician to go on a call, a mental health call with a police officer whenever somebody is in some type of mental health crisis.
During the pilot program, there were more than 160 mental health crisis calls.
Now that the state has given greater parity for mental health, we felt that this was absolutely a step in the right direction to invest in resources and ultimately become a model of how our police and mental health clinicians work together to address mental health in our community and to destigmatize and decriminalize mental health.
Hendrickson says they hope to have six clinicians placed at each of the six precincts by the end of the year. One success story?
He was on the Greyhound bus, which was traveling through Gwinnett County, and our teams were able to be deployed at that site and de-escalate the situation, disarming that young man and getting him the resource that he needed. Had that bus gone through another jurisdiction, it could have ended another way. Had officers not been trained to recognize that this is a person having a serious mental health episode, it could have ended fatal, but it didn't.
The story caught the attention of the national media.
I know we are going to continue to see incidents like that where we can save lives, where we can assure that people having mental health crisis are getting the care that they need. And when police are called, that our first responders instantly know the difference between somebody having a mental health episode and somebody just having criminal activity.
Officers respond to these types of calls on a daily basis.
I just applaud our public safety officials for really stepping up and getting this program launched, and to a degree that has already shown improving results.
In the end,
because at the end of the day, we want to save lives and we want our officers to be safe. We want the people they're responding to be safe. We want those that are impacted by it to be safe. And so models like this are important to communities.
Jennifer Griffiths, 95.5 WSB.
Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you for joining us for our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. We'll talk to you again next week on 95.5 WSB.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.